When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
We give so much of our day to other people and caring for others that we often forget to look out for ourselves.
Absolutely.
and ways to keep us well. And I think, you know, to be able to treat people, we need to first be able to treat ourselves well.
Welcome to the Doctor's Kitchen podcast with me, Dr. Rupi, and today we're going to be talking about yoga for health. Now, in my second book, Eat to Beat Illness, I not only blend together the science with delicious recipes inspired by cuisines from across the world, I also talk about the intersection of lifestyle and how that improves health outcomes. Things like yoga, mindfulness therapies, sleep, as well as sense of purpose, community, and other forms of exercise. Today, we're going to be talking about yoga as a method of restorative practice and exercise and even a way of life. It's a practice I talk a lot about in the new book, Eat to Beat Illness. And today, Dr. Claire Hennigan, who is a fully qualified GP and a trainer in Ashtanga and Vinyasa yoga, is going to talk to us about why yoga can be thought of as a therapy. She actually took out some time from her GP training to travel to India and become a yoga teacher, completing 200 hours. She also did another 40 hours of training and mentoring and does therapeutic yoga at levels 1 and 2. She now teaches publicly alongside working as a general practitioner and has also been able to teach yoga to other doctors at conferences and seminars and with the Royal College of GPs. Claire is fascinated by the health benefits of yoga, including help with mental health, musculoskeletal issues, and chronic disease. Stick around to the end of the podcast where I sum up some of the benefits of yoga and we go through some of your rapid fire questions that I put to Dr. Claire. Dr. Claire.
Hello.
You made it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. For those who don't know, I've known Dr. Claire for a couple of years now.
I
reached out to you whilst you were training. Mm-hmm. You were doing the Masters in Nutritional Medicine at University of Surrey, which is what I'm currently doing.
Yes.
And I remember you sharing some of your slides with me so I could get an idea of just how in-depth it is. And it's pretty in-depth.
It is quite intense, but really interesting.
Super interesting, yeah. And I remember you came down to my practice and we had a coffee and I was just fascinated by, you know, the work you're doing, which is combining the science and the art, I suppose, of yoga and yoga therapy for lots of different issues, and how you're also interested in nutrition and stuff. Basically, someone after my own heart. That's amazing. So why don't you give us a little bit of background to how you got into yoga and nutrition, and what has your journey been?
Yes, of course. So I guess from a young age, I was always interested a lot in exercise. I used to dance quite frequently. So that was something that, you know, movement, exercise was very important to me. So belly dancing mainly.
Nice. Okay.
So used to be a big, big passion of mine. And then obviously went to medical school and I found yoga really in the probably last year of medical school. So it was when I was studying for my finals. I came across the, so I was at Newcastle University, and I came across the yoga society, and they were holding classes in the local church hall. And I started going along with one of my friends, and just made it a regular part of our schedule. And I really enjoyed learning about yoga, learning about the postures. And then I started to notice that that had benefits in my everyday life and helped kind of my feelings of stress, and helped with my studies in the end of medical school, really.
Finally, in medical school, I've got horrific memories.
It's not a pleasant experience.
Actually, I remember during my final year, I got back into meditation quite a bit.
Did you?
Yeah, I started, it's going to sound a bit weird, but I started recording a mantra to myself. I think I use GarageBand or something on my Mac. And it would be like 15 minutes long, and it would just be simple things like breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, white light, breathe out, negative energy, yada, yada, yada. I don't want to go into too much detail. Yeah. But, and then I would listen to that recording once a day whilst I was doing my studies, because I remember it being absolutely stress-inducing, like just the sheer volume of stuff that we had to to remember. But I imagine like yoga has some similarities in that, right? Because I mean, I know from my practice and stuff, but the whole breath and the concentration on your breath, as well as it being a physical activity,
absolutely,
it's quite an amazing combination.
Absolutely. And the postures in yoga themselves are quite challenging, and when we go into the postures, we always bring our attention back to our breath, and that helps ease the postures and focus the mind. And I think that's what we try and take off the mat to bring to when we get challenges in everyday life, kind of using those techniques to help relax and deal with those stressful situations.
Amazing. And so you started in your final year of medical school, and then where did it take you? Is this something you did during your foundation years?
So it was when I could. I think I remember from foundation.
Where did you do your foundation training?
So I trained up in Edinburgh. So I was at one of the big hospitals in Edinburgh for my first 2 years, so that's our junior doctor training. So I'm sure you'll remember long hours, stress. So I did definitely keep up my yoga when I could. I was doing a lot of shift work, so I was managing to go to kind of random morning, evening classes when I could. And then I came down to London to do my GP training. And it was about after my first job in GP training, I think going straight into it, continuing with the long hours, you know, not eating well, the stress of the job itself. And there was some personal stress as well that was happening at the time. I was really reaching a point that I was burning out, and I was really close to leaving medicine actually at that point. But actually my GP training scheme were really, really open with me, and they said, you know, you can have some time off and see how you feel after that, and if you want to come back to GP training you can. So I used that as an opportunity, and during that time that's when I went off to India and did my teacher training.
Amazing. Which part of India did you go to?
So I was in Goa, which is quite relaxed part of India compared to the rest of India, but it was a gorgeous place.
You know, that story really resonates with me quite a bit. I remember my first year of foundation training, 3 months in, that's when I discovered I had my own heart condition, atrial fibrillation with irregular fast heartbeat. And that picture of stress, poor sleep, eating on the go, you know, a new job that you're learning so much. I remember that steep learning curve of just learning the sorts of basics of how to be a hospital doctor, whilst not forgetting, but almost like the knowledge that you gained in medical school was kind of like to the side.
Absolutely.
It was more about, like, you know, how do you sell this CT to a radiologist in hospital? And you're like, please let me CT the head. This is what I'm meant to be doing. But yeah, no, it was all that sort of like the new sort of experience. And when I started looking at my own lifestyle and taking a step back and recognizing where those stressful points are, one of the things, apart from nutrition, obviously, and getting better sleep, was a meditation sort of practice that I started doing a lot more often. And I think yoga is a nice way to sort of get yourself into that. But so you've had a practice since the final year of medical school and going into actually doing it as a teacher.
Yes, absolutely. So it's been for about the last 5 years now. Yeah,
wow.
I've been solidly.
Yeah, and Goa, so how long were you out there for?
So I did a month intensive course. So there's a few different types of yoga teacher trainings you can do. There's month intensives, or sometimes they're over a period of years or weekends, weeks, depending. Mm. So it's a very intensive 4 weeks. 6 a.m. starts and sometimes 8 p.m. finishes.
Oh, wow.
So it's not a yoga retreat.
It doesn't sound like a retreat. Sounds quite military.
But yeah, really interesting. So you start with, always start the day with kind of meditation, breathing exercises, your practice, and they devolve into the philosophy, some anatomy, which is a helpful recap. Mm. But yeah, fantastic.
Where did you do your training?
So it was in Goa in India.
Do you know what, remember what school it was?
Oh yes, it was Sampurna.
Oh, Sampurna. I've actually been there.
I think I remember you saying that you went to a class, a drop-in class there. Yeah, I did.
So I was actually at my friend's wedding in Mumbai a couple of years ago. Mm. I remember that's when I started my gratitude exercise, gratefulness every day exercise. Oh. Yeah, like 2016 now. Mm-hmm. And yes, my friend was getting married in Mumbai. We, as like a whole group of us, like medical students, we all went to Goa just to chill out for like 4 days. And then I was there, and then somebody from Sampurna who was following me on social media reached out to me and said, come to a class.
Aww.
And I remember that school is amazing.
It's
like this huge sort of like central, sounds like a big advert for them, but this is a huge central sort of like
there are other yoga studios available.
This huge like central sort of studio with like mosquito nets. Yep. Everything's open. You have these little huts around it, and people like lived in the neighboring village and stuff. It's right by the beach. So
and Agonda's gorgeous,
amazing,
absolutely
isn't it?
Gorgeous. My favorite beach in Goa. Lovely.
That's gorgeous. But I can't imagine doing 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day. Wow, that's proper intense. Mm. So who's that course for? Is that for people who are looking to become a teacher, or can just anyone go?
Yeah, I think people go in with different attitudes. Some people are definitely wanting to teach at the end of it. I have to say, I wasn't sure that I definitely wanted to teach at the end of it. I just knew that I really enjoyed yoga and I wanted to learn more about it.
Yeah.
And I think a yoga teacher training is definitely the way to go. Mm. There's also workshops and things that you can do, but if you want to really understand yoga, it's a really good way to learn more about it, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. So when you came back, all refreshed and replenished.
Yes, I know. So yeah, it was amazing. I wasn't sure if I would come back to training, but at the end of the 6 months, I definitely actually felt ready, and it's definitely built me a lot of skills that I've taken with me for the rest of my training, and finally managed to complete my GP training.
Yeah, congratulations. As a couple of weeks ago, you're now a fully fledged general practitioner.
Yeah, starting the life of salary and locum.
Yeah, GP. Salary and locum GP, yeah. But we were recently at a conference where you actually took a whole bunch of GPs as part of the Royal College of GPs sort of like wellness day. Through a yoga session.
That was really cool. That was the RCGP launched a new kind of wellbeing conference for GPs, which is obviously so important. It was the first of its kind, and it was free for GPs to attend, because I think obviously we give so much of our day to other people and caring for others that we often forget to look out for ourselves.
Absolutely.
and ways to keep us well, and I think to be able to treat people, we need to first be able to treat ourselves well. It was a fantastic conference because you were speaking as well, and I was able to teach two kind of workshop sessions and introduce people to yoga, and I think people really enjoyed it.
It's fantastic. I'm really gutted that I didn't get to do the actual session. I had to run off, but it looked amazing, and the feedback was incredible, and this is quite interesting to see a lot more yoga creeping into the NHS.
So definitely
not only for the wellbeing perspective for the doctors, but also from a social prescribing perspective.
Definitely.
So Dr. Michael Dixon, who's the founder of the College of Medicine, has done some fascinating stuff on this. Have you come across some of the work?
Dr. Michael Dixon, and I know recently as well that they held the yoga and health conference. I think it was just last weekend. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so there was a big yoga and health conference, and I think Prince Charles did the kind of opening address at the conference as well. So it's quite topical that we're speaking about it this week. linking obviously all the benefits of yoga and health, and certainly there was a lot of promise that potentially more money will be spent on yoga in the NHS, and it could be part of kind of social prescribing for us actually to be able to to give to our patients.
To patients, yeah, yeah. Do you have experience of discussing yoga with your patient?
Yeah.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah. So it's something I do try and bring up fairly frequently. Mm. And I was listening to your podcast with Dr. John Sykes recently as well, exercise. And I have to say, a lot of that resonated with me when he said where he kind of brings in exercise to his patients. And I do think that as well with yoga, it tends to be, I do tend to bring it in more with the patients that are maybe suffering from conditions such as anxiety and depression. Certainly as part of that, I would talk about, you know, have you thought about yoga, meditation, exercise with that, and see how, obviously how they get on, if they're open to, you know, trying things and seeing the benefits, definitely.
Yeah. How do you broach that topic? Because I imagine a lot of people have some perception of yoga being a bit middle class, being a bit woo-woo. But I mean, I personally don't have that opinion. I find the practice phenomenal, and the science behind it, which we'll go into in a little bit, is really, really convincing. Mm. But for a lot of lay people who haven't even heard of yoga before, or just think it's something that's for the sort of upper class or the, you know, the wellness warriors, how do you start that conversation?
So I think it's about changing people's perspectives to yoga. And So yoga essentially is for everyone. Absolutely. I think, especially the world of Instagram, you see that you think yoga is just for these middle class people, sports bras,
leggings.
Those leggings, doing handstands. But in essence, that isn't yoga. Anyone can do yoga. If you can breathe, you can do yoga. Mm. And I think it's just explaining that to patients, to potentially them to having an open mind going through the different types of yoga and what really yoga is. So kind of starting to explain that. So yoga really means union. And so we link our body, our breath and our mind together.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I love that sort of analogy of that saying, if you can breathe, you can do yoga. And that union of mind, body and
breath.
Mind, body and breath. That is something that I think can be separated when you're just doing regular exercise, and actually having that sort of connection is really important. It might explain some of the benefits that we see.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And yeah.
So having that conversation and starting people on their journey, how do you do that? Do you point people in the direction of certain online materials, or are you aware of sort of like local church groups, for example, like church halls where they actually do yoga?
I mean, obviously the ideal would be if we had somewhere as GPs that we could ideally say, oh, this is a yoga class that would be beneficial for you, and we could prescribe it on the NHS. I think obviously that would be the ideal. And I think certainly in some areas of the country that is starting to happen. But in my kind of practice, unfortunately, we don't really have that available. Certainly it depends how the person is and why they're kind of maybe seeking yoga. Obviously some people are quite isolated or find it very difficult to go to classes and want to start practicing by themselves. Certainly I think there's some great online stuff. One that I particularly use, although there is others, is Yoga with Adrienne on YouTube, just because it's something I used years ago, but I just think she's got so much material out there. There's so many classes. They can be 10 minutes, 15 minutes. There's yoga for anxiety, yoga for back pain, yoga for stress, anything. She's got it, and I think it's quite a nice way to get an introduction to it by yourself that you can do at home. It's free, it's quick, you can add it into your day.
I'm glad you recommend that, because I've been recommending that for a number of years.
Everyone keeps asking me if there's other sources, and there is other stuff out there, but I think that's just such a great free resource there, and I think she's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a huge library of information there.
Exactly. I even saw some interesting ones at Yoga for Heartbreak and things that are quite good. So she's got a lot of good content in there. Certainly as well, I'd encourage GPs. So in my area, we've got a few yoga studios nearby, and certainly what I do recommend to patients is a lot of the yoga studios have community classes. So I mean, again, this stigma of it being for the middle class is quite often yoga studios in London, it is £20 a class. But these community classes are kind of pay what you feel, donation-based classes, and they're often raising money for charities, and you can go along, drop in and try yoga. And it tends to be a variety of different people that are going, not just those in sports bras and things. So it's a more comfortable environment generally. But obviously, and just letting patients as well know about all the different types of yoga, because I mean it's overwhelming, isn't it?
It is,
what all the different types are.
I'm often asked like what I practice, and I'll be honest, I don't know. I don't know whether it's asana or vinyasa. I just kind of move and do warrior one, warrior two, and then a few other movements, and you know, I like to I dip in and out of classes, and I find classes useful because they're quite challenging. Usually explore other poses that I haven't done before, but I find the most relaxing is when I actually do yoga on my own, on the carpet or on a mat that I've got at home, in my own time, 20-25 minutes, like I did this morning, and I don't have to kind of like crook my neck to look at the instructor to make sure I'm doing it right. And if I fall over, it's not that embarrassing. So like, I think, you know, dipping in and out of classes, getting a few movements, and then practicing at home is a really good way to start.
Absolutely. And I guess the benefits of classes is that you've got someone there that's watching you while you're starting to learn, and making sure that you're doing the poses correctly. Because if they're practiced safely, then, you know, yoga's a very safe practice. But, you know, there's that worry if you're trying quite challenging poses by yourself that you might, you know, injure yourself.
I'm definitely already having
But then absolutely bringing it to that daily practice by yourself is obviously the essence of yoga, and getting that connection with yourself is what it's all about. Where you get the most benefits.
With regard to like chronic stress, I think there's an obvious sort of intersection there with why yoga might be beneficial. I was doing some research for the new book Eat to Beat Illness, and yoga just kept on coming up for so many different topics, and that's why I cover yoga in the brain section, in the immunity section, in the inflammation section, but specifically for chronic stress. We know that that can change the structural anatomy of your brain. And when you practice things like deep breathing, you actually lower those inflammation signals that are related to chronic stress, amongst other physical things as well. Have you come across some of that kind of stuff in the past, or is that something that you were taught during your training, or something that you've developed an interest in afterwards?
So I mean, obviously it's something that I found in myself, but also you are taught throughout the training, and I guess the training's kind of based on, you know, people's experiences of yoga, and and they've kind of done it from experience rather than necessarily evidence based. I would say a lot of the evidence of yoga is quite difficult. There's only quite a few studies. They're very small sample sizes, with not kind of adequate controlled. It's hard to double blind, for example, the yoga, and there's large variations of the practices of yoga, therefore it's really hard to kind of correlate that well across the studies. But I think there's a lot of obviously good small bits of work that are out there that are certainly showing the benefits, and some of them are psychological, so kind of how we perceive stress, that they find that through practicing yoga, you've actually got a kind of a lower perception of stress. Also through yoga you get more of a self-awareness, and, you know, able to have more self-care, recognize, you know, when things aren't feeling right in your body, in your mind, and you know, starting early to change those things. And then there's obviously the physiological components of kind of proposed kind of decrease of the hypopituitary axis, less sympathetic nerve innervation, and then, you know, there are some studies showing that there might be decreased cortisol and catecholamines, and then there's some work about kind of gene expression, which you mentioned as well, actually.
I find that kind of stuff fascinating, and going back to how hard it is to do these kind of studies, A, the funding's not there, but B, like you said, it's you can't blind. What I'd like to see actually is a study that teases out whether it's purely the exercise component of yoga, or whether it's the exercise and breathing component that leads to those extra benefits, if they're seen at all. So, you know, in the podcast that I did with Dr. John, for example, we talked about the benefits of exercise in general, so the benefits of gene expression, positive gene expression, reducing inflammation signals, IL-6 for example, mitochondrial biogenesis, as well as reducing the inflammatory signals. It's hard to tease out whether the effects on chronic stress from yoga are from the exercise component, or is actually the breathing. And I think that combination is quite interesting.
I think it is,
because it's almost like you're combining benefits of the exercise as well as meditation. And there's lots of research looking at meditation. And this is kind of like a form of meditation in itself.
Absolutely. Meditation is an essence of yoga. It's part of yoga. And I would agree. I think there must be some extra benefits that are from that being linked into the exercise component as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, the diet and exercise component. Yeah. Yes, there is like diet that certainly has effects, that benefits. But when you combine that and the synergistic effect of diet and exercise, it's no wonder you see so many benefits to your overall well-being and health outcomes.
Yeah.
Mm. And so I'm fascinated by how yoga is... it's in a whole bunch of lifestyle programs in the US that are now covered by medical insurers. So a study that I always go back to is the Dean Ornish studies looking at those with low-grade prostate cancer and how aggressive their cancer was at a fixed endpoint later on in the line. Some of those were just given the standard advice about healthy diet, exercise. Others were on a more intensive program where they were suggested certain types of foods, largely plant-based diets, some supplements, but also meditation, exercise regimes, of which they included yoga as well. And the results from that are pretty stark. And it's kind of like, why don't we have these kind of programs in the UK? And you know, it's really encouraging to see that potentially the result of this conference the other day.
Absolutely. That's something that we could really hope for, isn't it? That it can be part of our plans for patients with the likes of kind of the chronic pains, anxiety, depression, those kind of things going forward, definitely.
It'd be really interesting to see whether, because I know chronic pain sufferers are immensely difficult to treat, they're often very complicated reasons as to why there's chronic pain, whether that would have an effect on attendance rates in general practice as a marker of how well they're doing as well.
Yes.
I imagine someone being put through a program where they had constant support and things like yoga as well as perhaps dietary advice, with that would lead to improved outcomes. I mean, my internal bias is saying yes, that it would. The skeptic would be, well, if you're giving that patient so many touch points, it's no wonder that they're going to come back to the GP. Unfortunately, is you know, the butt of all, basically, the end goal. They have to deal with everything. But
absolutely, I think there's an interesting study in Massachusetts in the States that looked at A&E attendances, and I think they studied over 1,000 patients, and it took about an eight-year period, I think it was, and they looked at patients' attendances before and then after a kind of stress reduction training, and they found that it was reduced quite significantly.
Really?
Absolutely. So I guess that, and it was also quite a cost-effective measure as well. So
Where there's cost effectiveness, the NHS is prick up.
Exactly, yeah.
Which unfortunately is like the fact of the matter is that, you know, unless something is shown to be cost saving and effective and improve quality of life, which obviously we need all those things, then the NHS won't fund it. But that's really interesting to hear. So, how many people did that involve? Do you remember?
It was just over 1,000 people, I think, in the end that they used.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So we can always link to the studies.
There is evidence out there. I mean, like, you know, there's changes where they measured, like, you know, gene expression and inflammation outcomes that I'm absolutely fascinated with with regards to mind-body interventions. So not just yoga, but Tai Chi and Qigong and... breathing like meditation techniques as well. I think that's certainly something that is so relevant to today's society, with our sort of like stresses coming from lots of different sources, our environment, the urbanization of everything, the lack of natural exposure.
And I think you absolutely. So there are some interesting studies about that, particularly with the gene expression. So there was a 2012 study that looked into loneliness in the elderly, and they took a group and did a kind of mindfulness-based stress reduction program with them, and found that the there was a reduction in the gene expression of NF-kappa-B, which is a pro-inflammatory gene, and there was also a similar study done in carers of dementia sufferers. So these were family members that cared for their their family members that had dementia.
Gotcha, and again, which is a very stressful job.
Absolutely.
Itself,
so it's a really, you know, emotive and stressful role. And they found that through stress reduction as well, I think it was about 45 patients that as well that they had the same decreased expression of that gene.
That's amazing. Was it all different types of mind-body interventions or stress relieving exercises?
So, yeah, it was. So it's a mindfulness-based stress reduction, but incorporated kind of yoga, meditation and stress reduction. So it's an 8-week program.
Amazing. Yeah, I can so see this being funded as well. Like, and ring fencing some money for this.
Absolutely.
As well. Like, you know, just doing these little trials because... Mm. If the downside is that they get, patients get some exercise.
Yeah,
it's hard
it's
to
still
argue
beneficial,
against, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're not
absolutely.
Dealing with like a drug that has potential side effects. Well, every drug does have side effects.
Yeah,
there's a risk benefit ratio.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's amazing.
Absolutely, and it's just a great thing to be able to do alongside the medication that we need to give for our patients and augment that.
Absolutely. As an adjunct to some of the therapies that
absolutely.
Are very well evidence-based and actually, you know, we need to entertain patients with, you know, this is a fantastic way of looking at the patient holistically and trying to get, you know, other aspects. And there's also so many intangibles around the act of going to a yoga class or doing yoga practice on your own.
Yeah.
You know, the community feel,
absolutely.
The connections that you probably forge with other people in the same class.
Yeah.
The connection you have with your teacher and the inspiration you get from them, you know, there's so many different things that you can't really measure in a randomized controlled trial.
Yeah, exactly. That we just need to kind of learn from experience, don't
we? Yeah.
There's so many people that are, you know, suffering from loneliness in the UK and, you know, that would benefit from going to yoga classes and all the other benefits that you get with it too.
Yeah. Loneliness is this paradoxical... concept, I think, in a world that is so uber connected these days.
Yeah,
we have record levels of depression as the result of loneliness. And activities like an exercise class or, you know, the social prescribing element to what we should be encouraging people to do is something that I think needs greater attention, which is, I find, quite frustrating, actually, because, you know, we have developed and we've evolved to live in these tribal sort of communities, yet we're having to essentially force ourselves to live a certain... Or we have to force ourselves to, you know, do these activities to essentially mimic what we should be doing.
Yeah.
Which is, it's just the way of the world. It's an observation.
At the moment, there's so much to say for that human connection, isn't there? Yeah, we do tend to live quite a lot of our lives through what we should be doing or we think we should be doing at the moment. And through social media, it's not actually having that genuine human connection daily with someone, is it?
Yeah. And it's quite hard to express that and teach a patient that who is coming to you, as you know, with a general as a general practitioner. You know, they're often presenting with physical symptoms or mental symptoms. And to turn around and say, well, this is a result of loneliness is not going to be the best way to frame that conversation.
No.
So, you know, putting little tips and hints that essentially don't cloud what you're actually trying to tell the patient, but actually, you know, are going to give them some actionable tips to help them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Some tools and resources that they can go to.
Exactly.
And,
it's almost like I wish I had a toolbox in the NHS. I'm like, okay, well, let's do this whole program for you. We're going to sort your diet out, get you doing some exercise, do a bit of yoga, bit of mindfulness-based therapy, and then let's see what happens.
It's
this concept of rewilding that I absolutely love. There's a really good TED talk on rewilding. I don't know if you've come across it's more from the context of the environment and putting the right species back in the environment and just seeing what happens. And I really like that analogy. I think a physiotherapist told me about it once, and it's just this concept of, well, let's put your body and your sort of position or whatever in the environment that is designed to thrive in and see what happens. So let's correct what shoes you're wearing, or let's correct your diet, or let's correct you know, your activity levels and you know, get you moving a lot more as you have been designed from an evolutionary standpoint to do, and see what happens. And honestly, a lot of people's physical ailments and mental ailments just seem to go away. And I think it's this sort of like notion, the biggest secret of medicine being, you know, your body is one incredible machine that's very capable of looking after itself. And we know the pathophysiology behind that. We know what the science is saying behind that.
Absolutely, that's so interesting. I'll have to give that a listen.
I'll put it in the show notes actually in the doctorskitchen.com just for people to listen to, because I think it's a fascinating sort of analogy for a lot of things.
Yes, definitely.
There was a bunch of studies that I looked at when I was writing the immune section for E to B illness. Mm. And again, research is demonstrating that with some practices like Qigong and Tai Chi, as well as yoga, you know, you can positively improve your immune cell function.
Yeah.
There was a podcast that I did with Dr. Jenna Machocki that if you haven't listened to at home, you should definitely listen to. It's all about immune health and how the notion of boosting your immune system is quite misleading. It's more about like supporting your immune system.
Mm.
But what these researchers demonstrated with the yoga practice is that it can express the impact the expression of your genes that positively improves your immune cells, essentially.
Yes. Like,
increases the number of natural killer cells, increases or reduces the likelihood of you suffering things like common colds and viruses. Fascinating stuff. Is this something that you've come across yourself?
Absolutely. I think I've read the similar study. Absolutely. I think that one was quite, it was a relatively quite quick intervention. Mm. I think it was part of kind of a yoga retreat. So it was, these changes came on quite quickly. So it was recorded, I think, within 2 hours of the activity actually being done. And absolutely, it was showing that potentially they could increase the action of natural killer cells, which is quite an interesting theory, because it's noted in chronic stress that actually the activity of natural killer cells is reduced.
Yes.
So that would be quite an interesting link and something to certainly take forward in some more research and would be quite interesting. And it's also shown that it can increasing expression of megakaryocyte maturation and also platelet production itself. And obviously this is a very small study with a very short intervention, but certainly something that would be interesting to see more of.
Yeah, it mirrors some of the other stuff that I read on, not to do with yoga, but I think it was to do with meditation practice. So they looked at a cohort of people who were taken on a retreat. So it's a very unnatural situation.
We're all
going to
go on a retreat.
So many confoundings, But they were taken on a retreat and taught a whole meditation practice. And they demonstrated lengthening of the telomeres. So not just reduction of the degradation of telomeres, which are the repeating bits of material at the end of your chromosomes that are essentially a biological marker of aging.
Mm-hmm.
But they demonstrated that they could actually lengthen the telomeres. So it literally had an anti-aging effect.
Yeah.
And whilst we can't prescribe retreats for everyone, you know, having a little mini retreat in your own house, I think, is something that I try and do. So, you know, a 5-minute meditation in the morning, an intention that I do at the end of my bed. Every day I get out of bed, I have this little mantra that I say to myself, the world is beautiful. Today's going to be very productive. You're going to have a happy day. You're going to have a positive day. And having that sort of like intention for the rest of the day, I think, is really useful. And then doing a movement exercise. So whether it be HIIT training, whether it be yoga, whether it be something quite restorative, relaxing like Qigong or Tai Chi. Actually, for a lot of people, I don't think they've come across Tai Chi or Qigong. Is that something that you've had experience of yourself, or...?
It's interesting, actually. I've read a lot of stuff about both of those, but I've not actually practiced them myself. Have you done much?
I've done Tai Chi before, and I've got to be honest, a little bit too slow for me.
Was it?
But it's very, it's quite intense for something that is very slow, almost like tortoise-like movements. It is quite intense because you give intense focus, whole focus to every little brushstroke of your hand and stuff like that, which I think I struggled with.
I was going to say, is it more the mental focus rather than the physical posture itself?
And
the kind of slowing of the mind.
I've certainly watched a lot of people in San Francisco in the morning doing Tai Chi and stuff. And I've joined in a handful of times. But I found it quite, I think I'm easily distracted. But it's something to, you know, it's a challenge.
Oh,
it's
definitely.
Something to try.
Exactly. And I think, quite often in yoga we always talk about kind of yang and yin, and quite a lot of us practice a lot of, we call them more yang classes, which are more the vigorous classes and dynamic classes, but we're also in our private lives living very busy and stressful lives, and then we're going into these busy and classes that are stressful in the body, and actually should we be doing more of the kind of more yin style of yoga, which is slower and more time to focus and, and relax, and that balance is what,
That's fantastic, Have you come across some patients that you've recommended yoga to and with some benefits? Do you have any stories or anecdotes?
I think definitely, like I said, kind of using the yoga more in kind of depression, anxiety. I had one patient who was suffering from really bad anxiety and had never done any yoga at all, and recommended to go along to kind of local community classes, and started, I think she ended up getting a kind of induction pass and going along most days for the month, and found it was really helpful. Particularly, she needed a, she was very suffering very bad anxiety, and she needed a period of time off work, and it was actually a nice focus for her to do while being off, and helped certainly her anxiety symptoms alongside medication and things as well.
That's fascinating, That's really good. It's almost like there's so many different avenues that we could help patients, whether it be cold water swimming, for example. I know some people try that, and on TV as well, I've seen some people try that. I don't think it's as accessible as the other thing.
If you live by the sea.
If you live by the sea, maybe. But certainly, you know, park run, walking practices. You know, there's walking groups that I think that a lot of GPs have got into now. And the whole culinary aspect as well. I do a lot of work with Made in Hackney, one of the ambassadors. I'm actually doing something tomorrow at the Barts Hospital. We're doing a day where we're doing a little demo for children to highlight the, it sounds terrible to talk about it, but highlight the record rates of constipation that are leading to some severe like intervention. I mean, some of these kids are having to have surgery because of chronic constipation. So yeah, that whole practice of, you know, getting into an environment with random people you never met before and cooking doing an exercise class or something, you know, there is something, again, very intangible about that experience, but certainly very, very refreshing and incredible for well-being and sense of purpose.
Absolutely, and I think particularly the stories from Park Run are really nice of the differences that they've made to patients' outcomes, and, you know, patients coming off their antidepressants or depression medications are really interesting. Our practice has recently linked up with our local Park Run in Peckham as well, actually, which has been great. And it was a great incentive even just for the staff to get everyone to go along as well. And, you know, some people walked it, but it was fine. I think that's what's fantastic about Park Runs. There's always a volunteer at the end and some, you know, chatting, encouraging everyone to complete it.
Your patients must love you in that area. You know, you're talking to them about yoga, you've got a nutrition masters. I know you just started on like your GP Blush. journey, but yeah, must be getting loads of thank you cards. For those who don't know, thank you cards are a really good gesture of goodwill, and that you can upload them onto your portfolio and take it to your appraisal. So
they are the nicest thing to get.
They are,
they mean so much, they really do. When someone actually takes the time to write a thank you card to us, I think
I cherish all the thank you cards that I've had in the past couple of years. Unfortunately, it's not like a daily. It's not a daily occurrence.
Frame them.
But when you do, it's like, oh wow, you know, you really, I really feel like you've done.
Absolutely, you know, that's those little snippets. Don't they make us realise why we do what we do?
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of like why I still practice my gratitude exercise.
Yes.
I stopped recording it on Instagram, but you know, sharing it and actually encouraging other people to do it. There is something quite special about just remembering those little positive accents at the end of your day.
Definitely.
Whether it be a thank you card, whether it be bumping into someone, whether it be something as simple as, you know, a bus driver smiling at you or welcoming you onto the bus instead of just ignoring you. You know, those little things that you would otherwise just completely forget about. You bring it back to the forefront of your memory, and it's very replenishing, I find.
Absolutely. I think even on my journey here this morning, I was packed into this, you know, packed into the train, squished amongst everyone. And as we were pulling into London Bridge, the driver just said a few really nice words and wished us all a really nice day.
Oh, that's great.
And I was just like, that's really, actually really set me off nicely for the day, and something I'll really, you know, be thankful for
yoga
today.
Practice, isn't he?
Has. And he's very cheery. And also the nice weather today is really helping.
Absolutely. So where do you see the future of yoga going in the NHS? Have you had any thoughts about this?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that it would be fantastic if we had somewhere that we as GPs could advise, well, prescribe for our patients and dedicated classes, potentially to whether that's set up to, you know, as whole classes or as set up to different conditions. So yoga for back pain, yoga for, you know, anxiety, yoga for, you know, well-being, whatever that is, and have dedicated teachers that, you know, are interested in that particular niche that can deliver, you know, a safe and effective, you know, yoga class
for
the patient.
Yeah, I think if something is recommended by your GP, you're more likely to listen to it as
Absolutely.
And I suppose, you know, the events that you've done with the Royal College of GPs is just heightening everyone's awareness of what the evidence base is saying and how effective yoga can be as a treatment.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's also really nice as well if us ourselves, like you with obviously, you know, the culinary medicine, if you're saying, you know, this is what I do and I try and practice this as well, and it that passion comes across, and I think our patients are more likely to start doing it if we're, you know, very enthusiastic about it, have had that experience, rather than saying, you know, I think you should do yoga, but I don't need to do yoga.
Yeah exactly. And there are any people out there who have tried yoga before, or perhaps they're completely new to it, what kind of tips do you have for them to get started?
Absolutely. So I think,
because I find the whole Instagram world very overwhelming when it comes to like the positions and stuff, like, oh god.
Absolutely. And I think you know, handstand isn't necessarily yoga. Absolutely. Yoga is moving and breathing, in essence. And I think, you know, I would tell you to be open, certainly. So there's such a wide variation in the types of yoga, the yoga teachers. And I think even if you've tried it once and it's you haven't quite enjoyed it, be aware that there's so many different other styles out there, so many different teachers. And I'm sure within that you'll be able to find someone that, you know, you like going to, that you know, have resonate with, and a practice that you enjoy. I mean, obviously there's lots of different types. There's, you know, quite commonly I think there's the vinyasa types, which are kind of quite flowing and dynamic classes, but there's also some really nice slower classes such as the yin yoga and restorative yoga. I don't know if you've ever tried any of those.
I don't think I've done yin.
it's a really nice class. It's where you hold postures for quite a long period of time, and so they're much kind of slower based classes, and they talk quite a lot more about philosophy maybe in those classes, because you've got a bit more time to kind of relax depending on who you go to.
Depending on how aggressive
on your
they
teachers,
are.
Yeah.
And what about those who have tried yoga and they haven't found any benefits or anything? Like, you know, is it, do you think, like, experiment with different types or?
Yeah, definitely. So I think if there's a class, you know, if you've gone to a vinyasa class and you haven't quite enjoyed it, try something else. So there's you know, hatha yoga, ashtanga yoga, maybe there's yoga for sleep yoga, yoga nidra. Try something else that works. And even doing meditation every day is part of yoga, and that's still doing yoga, I would say.
I like that. Yeah, even breathing is still yoga.
Absolutely.
We're doing yoga right now. I'm going to ask you a few rapid questions. I put out a call to everyone on social media, and a whole bunch of people came back, and they all have loads of questions about different types of yoga and stuff. So
yeah, no problem.
This is our opportunity to try and extract as much knowledge as we can about yoga from the expert. Okay, hot yoga thoughts.
Oh, okay. That's quite an interesting topic. I think people either love or hate hot yoga.
Yeah.
And I'm a bit wary about discussing some because of necessarily the evidence behind it. But I think hot yoga, personally, I actually very enjoy practicing hot yoga. I quite like the way it makes you feel. The classes are if you don't particularly like hot environments, and I probably wouldn't recommend it, they're very sweaty classes, but I quite enjoy the time that you take in each posture, and the way you can really feel into the different yoga poses, and the way that you feel when you leave a class. But I would say you have to be quite cautious, because it's a hot environment, you are more relaxed and your muscles are more relaxed, so there is an increased possibility of injury in those types of classes. So I would say, you know, if you enjoy it, then great, but just be aware of the potential problems with them as well.
Yeah It can be quite intense. I've found it depends on how hot the hot yoga is. I actually went to a class, I think my first hot yoga class in LA, and it was literally like being in a sauna.
Oh, it is.
And I think there are some benefits. Obviously, you have to be mindful of the fact that you're more injury prone, your muscles are more relaxed and stuff, you can overstretch. But there are some really interesting studies looking at the benefits of sauna in general. If you combine that with exercise, you know, maybe there's some additional benefits. Who knows? I don't think the study's been done on hot yoga specifically, but certainly upregulating heat shock proteins and how that has an effect on serotonins and longevity. That is something I think warrants more discussion.
Definitely.
There's some really interesting studies that I found out about via listening to Rhonda Patrick, who's a scientist in America. And she's fascinated with the idea of regular sauna goers. So I think it's 3 times a week at a temperature above, I'm going to get this wrong now. I think it was above 90 or 100 degrees. Not degrees centigrade. Degrees. Is it 100 degrees? Actually, no, I've definitely got that wrong. I'm going to have to double check what it actually was. There is reduction in the incidence of Alzheimer's, dementia. And increase in longevity as well.
Oh, fantastic.
And reduction in overall all-cause mortality. So I found that super interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Maybe extends to hot yoga. Yeah. I don't know. So this isn't rapid at all. We're just talking.
No,
I'll
try to be faster.
Yeah. Does Pilates have the same benefits as yoga? I'm more of a Pilates girl than a yoga girl.
I think there's certainly some of the same benefits with Pilates, I guess, with the Pilates is not as much of kind of the yoga philosophy and relaxation component to it, but it's certainly doing mindful movements. And I think with the Pilates, it's more kind of core based, more isolated types of movements, whereas and some people obviously find that more beneficial than the yoga, which is, you know, the more dynamic movements as well. So I think there's definitely some benefit. There's definitely overlap between both of them, definitely.
I think the whole concept of mindful movements extends throughout all the different practices you can find, and whatever suits you.
Absolutely.
I think it's probably
then
best.
Then do it, exactly.
Yeah. One of my really good friends in Miami, she is addicted to Pilates. And she, shout out to Amy. She loves it. She literally does like 5 times a week. And I can't see her going to anything else, but that works for her.
Absolutely,
and, you know,
absolutely.
That's her practice.
Yeah.
Yoga in pregnancy, thoughts?
Yeah, so I mean, definitely if you're someone that practices yoga normally and become pregnant, then, you know, it's definitely, we recommend, you know, you can still continue doing that. I would say it's definitely beneficial to find a pregnancy class that's local to you, because obviously as technically as can be quite dangerous in the first trimester, and then obviously as the pregnancy grows, you need to be obviously mindful of that, and you won't be able to do the same postures that you could do in a public class. So absolutely, yoga is great for pregnancy, but just go to a pregnancy class.
Yeah, there are specific pregnancy class that I obviously have not been to.
I was going to say one that you've been to.
I think those are, they're fantastic. There are lots of different options to maintain a practice or exercise as well throughout pregnancy.
Absolutely.
So this whole concept of, like, if you're pregnant, you just stay still, it is just, a myth. Yeah, and we shouldn't be encouraging that. There are lots of benefits of maintaining movement during pregnancy.
Definitely.
Reduction of gestational diabetes incidence and loads of other things, loads of other benefits. Is it good for sciatica? I think we've pretty much answered this.
You
have a back pain. There's
absolutely.
Lots of
good research.
It'd be interesting, your concept of, like, you know, yoga for back pain, yoga for mood, yoga for cardiovascular disease. Yeah. You know,
and I think there was an interesting study as well that looking at yoga for back pain, chronic back pain specifically, compared to either control or just exercise on its own. And actually the yoga came out higher.
Fantastic.
And I think that's probably what we were talking about with the mind-body aspect as well as the exercise itself with
Absolutely.
The chronic pain.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Is it okay to do a yoga practice daily, or do we need to have a few rest days?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think it's certainly, I think yoga absolutely can be a daily practice and should be a daily practice, whether that's meditation or movement. Obviously, if you have a very vigorous class and you're doing kind of, you know, 90 minutes and, you know, you might benefit from having some rest. But certainly yoga is that it's set as a practice and something that we should live our lives by. So having a bit of yoga every day is definitely worthwhile.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's about being intuitive about your body as well. Yeah. You know, I mix up my exercise regime. A lot of people ask me what I do to keep fit. You know, I do a mixture of endurance, HIIT training, strength training, and yoga as well. Yeah. And, you know, I try and move every day. But if I know that I'm sore from whatever I've done the night before, or the day before, that came out wrong. I chill out. I have a rest day. So, I think there's a lot of pressure these days to maintain, you know, consistency and routine and stuff. But you also have to be more in tune with how your body's feeling.
Definitely.
Actually, yoga helps with that.
Yeah, exactly. It helps you be aware of how you're feeling and yourself and recognizing that. That's one of the great benefits of it. So if it's just that, you know, actually I need just to do meditation today, that's perfect. That's yoga. That's going to help. Going to, you know, help me grow and practice.
I like often at the start of practices, start of classes, you know, the teacher usually asks how you're feeling, check in with yourself. Have you noticed how you're feeling today, or your bones are, what your mood is like? Are you stressed? And that kind of gives you that benchmark at the start to figure out, okay, how am I going to feel at the end of the session?
Absolutely.
And what's your intention as well?
Absolutely.
These are like specific questions.
Okay, good,
Are there benefits of practicing yoga dependent on the length or frequency of sessions? Or does any time and effort provide health benefits?
I think from what we've discussed, certainly that, you know, any time and effort, you're going to get some benefit from yoga. I don't think, you know, in the long run, you know, having a longer session than shorter session, I think it's about finding something that incorporates into your life that you can do for a long period of time. Absolutely. I think it's more about how you bring it into your life as a whole rather than one-off sessions of
Absolutely. Yeah. And when it comes to specific health benefits, we have discussed actually previously on the podcast with Dr. Anita about the benefits of yoga for things like endometriosis, menorrhagia, such painful periods, as well as PCOS as well. And I think those benefits may be extended to the fact that yoga is an exercise, and we know that exercise is beneficial for a lot of different things.
Yeah.
But in particular, when you add that with the meditation element, you know, there are probably some synergistic effects there.
Definitely.
Which I personally find fascinating. I think it's something that we need to explore a lot more, and hopefully with some funding we can actually demonstrate that in
definitely.
Some
proper
research.
Evidence, exactly.
Fascinating stuff there from Dr. Claire. You can catch Dr. Claire at Real Yoga Doctor on Instagram, and make sure you check out her website realyogadoctor.com as well. Today we talked about how yoga can be thought of as therapy for things like chronic stress, something that we see as general practitioners super, super commonly. And it's very, very clear to us that loneliness is becoming an absolute epidemic. As a stress relieving strategy, yoga is a perfect exercise, but others exist like Pilates and Qigong. These can be just as effective. We also talked about how yoga can balance inflammation as well as positively impact the expression of your genes. I've also linked some of the research that we talked about in the show notes on thedoctorskitchen.com, so make sure you check that out. Some small-scale research has demonstrated that yoga can improve your immune health as well by increasing the availability of certain cells that are responsible for maintaining your fighting ability against infection. And let's not forget the community aspect of yoga. Not only can you do this as an individual practice, but it's also encouraged, especially in the early stages of your practice, to do this as part of a group and go to a few classes, of which there are many available in the most high end of studios, but also in simple church halls that are available to a lot of people up and down the country. Check out thedoctorskitchen.com for more tips on how to get involved with yoga, as well as other mindfulness-based therapies. The new book, The Doctor's Kitchen, Eat to Beat Illness, is out now, and it will have lots more tips on how to improve lifestyle practices, as well as delicious meals to help you on your wellness journey. Make sure you give the podcast a 5-star review if you enjoyed it. It really does help other people find the information that will help them, and subscribe to thedoctorskitchen.com. I will catch you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.